I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 410, 81 degrees on this Thursday, August 7th, 2025. And I'm glad to bring in Lackawanna County Commissioner Chris Chermak. Commissioner, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show today.
Hey, Rob, how are you? Thanks for reporting on that incident today. That's very good.
Yeah, you know, we were aware of this. I was aware of this very quickly on, so was the entire news staff here. I saw the state police response by my house in Upper Lackawanna County on the Susquehanna border firsthand, and knew that it was something that was concerning. And we find out that two state troopers were shot. Thankfully, they're both in stable condition now at CMC, where you just left, right?
Yes. Yes, one of the troopers is there. I was speaking with the father of Trooper Perchinski just before I left. And thank God, you know, he's going to be fine, or he's going to be okay, obviously. He didn't have any life-threatening injuries. But they are moving him upstairs. The family was going upstairs to a room. They were in ICU, so hopefully, you know, they can get him out of there soon. But yeah, God was with them today, definitely.
And to hearing, and the governor and the head of the state police, Chris Parrish, did name both officers, Trooper Pacinski and Trooper Jenkins. To hear the heroism that this, they were immediately ambushed and put under fire. They described their vehicles as being riddled with bullets. Trooper Pacinski did utilize a tourniquet to help place on Officer Jenkins, who was shot in the arm. And a third trooper, who was unnamed at this point, placed their vehicle in the line of fire to help extricate the two of them from those areas who were both shot at this time. So it's just an outstanding display of heroism, and it shows, you know, Susquehanna County, Lackawanna County, the governor, and Chris Parrish said that New York State Police did respond to this as well as many other assets from around the area. You know, to hear that Trooper Pachinski's dad is a local police chief. They went to school with my children. He went to school with my children. You know, we're friends in school. So it just goes to show what kind of small world and the heroism that our law enforcement does day in and day out.
Absolutely. And this is stuff you see on television, and it's just crazy. And it hits home, especially when they're local families and local troopers. So, you know, God bless all of them, and just, you know, again, they were just, it was just, you know, it was a bad day, but in a different way, it was a good day, you know. So, you know, God bless them. And I just, you know, we pray for their speedy recovery.
Indeed. I mean, the outcome, I mean, obviously we all wish that this didn't even happen, but the outcome, knowing the first reports have came out of rifle fire and cars riddled in bullets and ambushed, you know, not knowing what they're walking into. And it just goes to show with our first responders, be it, you know, our law enforcement, our fire department, our EMTs, our EMS, what they face each and every day, you know, for us, the residents, the taxpayers of Pennsylvania.
Yep, I hope people appreciate that. You know, we had the CERT team from the Pennsylvania State Police were dispatched, so they come from every county. You know, our SWAT team here from Lackawanna County took our armored Bearcat, you know, they went. Our 911 dispatch center was notified in case we needed the mobile command center. So Bingham or New York State Police jumped in. So, like, everybody just responds. It's all good. The outcome is better than I was expecting.
Yeah, and you as Lackawanna County Commissioner responding to the area trauma center to know one of all the officers are going to. And I'm sure at the time you weren't aware of exactly who it was, and it didn't really matter. A state trooper was injured, and they were coming to your jurisdiction, and you responded there to give whatever resources you could do.
Well, you know, these guys are special to me and I know to you, and I support them any way I possibly can. I mean, really nothing I could do at this point, but just being there and being able to eventually talk to the father and then the other officers that are there in support. You know, everybody works together. That's how it goes.
The governor did mention, and I'll give, I was critical of the governor earlier on because he did make a public statement that two state troopers were shot while this was still an ongoing situation. Families weren't notified, and I was critical of that, and I still will remain critical of that. But I think he did do an excellent press conference at CMC just before we talked, just before we got on the phone today. And, you know, he said that he was joking, you know, actually joking with the family. You know, he's his girlfriend, Trooper Paczynski's girlfriend, is also a state trooper. And she was there. Bree, he said her name was. And the father was there. And we were busting each other's chops, the governor said. And he says, you know, when cops are busting your chops, you know, everything's going to be OK. And that was truly from the heart and truly heartfelt on my end, actually having been in those situations before.
I agree with you. I'm sure. Well, you know, as I said, Trooper Paczynski's father, he's a character in himself. So, but I'm glad that everybody's going to be okay. And just it's just that's a good ending to today, to a bad start. So.
Indeed. And, you know, I reached out to you earlier to get you on today before we even realized that, well, before this was even a thing today. And obviously, this is a priority for both you and I and why I wanted to get that out of the way. But while I have you on and the fact that we know that these two state troopers are going to be okay now, the issue with the reassessment that's been ongoing. And I've been critical of this. We've discussed it a lot. You've been critical of the process. One of the things we keep hearing, and I saw it in print, and I decided I was going to draw a line myself when I saw it in print when Monroe County hired Tyler Technologies, and they used the same old adage that we've seen your counterpart, the other commissioner, use and Tyler Technology use, that, listen, a third of property taxes are going to go up, a third of property taxes are going to go down, and a third of property taxes are going to stay the same. And they keep pushing that without giving us any real facts of Is that truly the case? So that's
going to be remain to be seen. Now I have as soon as we start to see the results of these hearings that are ongoing now, I'm going to get weekly reports on the process and what the numbers look like and what the adjustments were, and you know, then I can start to look at if it's a third. I mean, that's in a perfect world. So I have to wait and see when everything is finally finished where we ended up with that, what mistakes were made with Tyler Technologies, because obviously if they're making adjustments, then they weren't appraised properly. I was, as everyone knows, I hope that I voted no for this because, first of all, we were in the middle of a pandemic when they wanted to start this process. But at any rate, you know, let's see what the numbers look like. But, you know, right now we have the budget process started and we have this reassessment, you know, ongoing. I can tell you right now, I'm not, unless I have a lot to do with this year's budget and I can make adjustments and we can come to agreement on some cuts and some savings and, you know, where the county's headed financially, I'm not approving it. I mean, that's it. I'm not approving it. So there won't be a budget and there won't be, if that's the case, there won't be new reassessment numbers and new millages.
Now, with the numbers I'm talking about, with this one-third, one-third, and one-third, listen, I'm fine. I'm a realist as well. I understand if it's 28% or 27% and 34% or 32%. You know, it's still in the same ballpark, you know, and I'm good with that.
Right.
But as a county commissioner, can you commit to the taxpayers that you will not vote to certify this reassessment unless those numbers are made public? This not the specifics, just the percentage. What's the percentage exactly of what went down? What's the percentage exactly of what stayed the same? What's the percentage? Because we've been told all along it's one-third, one-third, one-third. And I understand that's a ballpark, but I think that number, when it's finally done, needs to be told to the public.
That's, and you know what, and you're right. I haven't really thought about it that way. So, you know, if it ends up being that 50% went down, and I don't know, I'm just throwing numbers out here. I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to wait and see what the results are here, because if the majority of the properties went up, I don't know. I mean, I'm not big on this reassessment. So I, you know,
Well, if 50% of the really properties went down in the end game, you know, that's a success story for the county. I would imagine everybody wants to tout that. But if in the end 50% went up, then we were misinformed and we were misled from the start. And then, you know, Monroe County right now is being lied to from the get-go if that's the case.
Well, and that's why I've been saying that what I think we need to do, we're at this point now. I think we need to put the brakes on. I said it at the meeting yesterday, at the commission meeting. I think we need to take the next 6 months and scrutinize all these appraised values, look at everybody's values, make sure that they are correct. And if anybody has issues, we take care of them. And, you know, before we take this any farther. So, you know, I'm not ready to certify this reassessment anyway, period. No matter what the numbers are, I want to push this back a little bit. So that's what I've been pushing for. I think that's fair. The commercial properties are way out of whack. Industrial vacant land was so messed up. There are no comparables. There was no way to get any idea what these values are. So to me, we're not ready to certify this yet. So, you know, for me, I'm not ready to. You asked me to commit on a number. I'm not ready to commit on anything because I'm not ready to certify this.
Well, not any number. I'm asking for you to commit to the taxpayers of Lackawanna County that you will make public the percentages of those once everything's said and done.
Oh, absolutely. Would let everyone know. Absolutely. And, you know, I guess when I get to the point where it's time to either certify it or not, I mean, I have to make a decision. If I'm not happy with the numbers I'm seeing, I'm not certifying it. You know, and it's part of the budget. And again, if I don't have the budget, last year they tried to make a fool out of me and cut me out of the budget. That can't happen this year. And if there's a new commissioner before the end of the year and the new commissioner votes with me, none of this might happen. So I don't know where we're headed yet.
Were you kept out of the process, but when you had your own options and your own press conference, they came to that and mocked you during it.
Exactly. And which was, you know, my budget was put together by financial experts and people that know what, you know, what they're doing. And one of them is an expert he used to work for the county years ago. So is with the budget. So, you know, that was not only aggravating for me, it was embarrassing to Lackawanna County to actually do that, but unprofessional, and that should have never happened. There was compromises that could have been made, but at any rate, they passed it. They passed 33%. I was not for that. And this year, it doesn't have that second vote. So, you know, the budget process right now is, we're going to be looking at every single line. And if the other commissioner wants to work with me, which right now he's attempting to, you know, we can maybe come to an agreement that makes sense. But yes, I will put together all the numbers on this. I mean, our assessor's office is going to put those numbers together. I want to know where we ended up. What was the numbers? What are the facts that, how many went down, how many went up, how many stayed the same? I want to know that. And basically, like I said, you know, if there's mistakes made, they're made by Tyler Technologies. Those are the people that are supposed to be the experts. They got paid the money. They're the ones that are supposed to have all the information.
So. All right. So you heard it here. Once we have the final numbers down and there's a percentage of how many went down, how many stayed the same, how many went up, Commissioner Chris Chermak has committed that he will not certify that reassessment unless those numbers are made public. Do I have that correct?
Well, we will have those.
All right.
I guarantee you. Yes, absolutely. 100%. I will have those numbers for you. I just, you know, I don't know when that will be, but it should be soon.
Well, it's by November, it needs to be pretty much done, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Definitely. You know, we need to have all the values. So, yeah, once that processes, once we get through these hearings, then we'll know. And we'll see how many get appealed to the Court of Common Pleas, too. We have to take that into account.
Yes. Yes. Well, with less appeals, with about a third of the appeals or less than half the appeals that they were expecting, and the auxiliary boards, they should get through these rather quickly, and hopefully we have this information sooner rather than later.
Right.
Because not only the county and the tax depends on that, but you know our school districts and municipalities are going to depend on this reassessment as well. So they're waiting on this formula.
Right. Everybody's on hold. Every municipality, every school district is on hold until we get these numbers.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
And we can't move forward until we have them. But again, in my mind, and what I've been saying for the whole entire time this process is going, the numbers have to be correct. And if they're not correct, I don't feel they're correct, I'm not voting for it, period.
All right. Commissioner Chris Chermak, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show, not only on this instance, but updating us on the what's now good news that both our troopers will be okay and are in stable condition from Geisinger CMC.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for everything.
Thank you. It's 425 here at WILK. We'll be back with the Rob O'Donnell Show. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement, and thankfully we didn't add any more today. We'll start off with Police Officer Lawrence John Ferrelli, Chester City Police Department in Pennsylvania, on this day in 1986. Died as a result of complications from cancer that developed from directing traffic at the Commodore Barry Bridge during the Wade dump fire. During the response, he was assigned to direct traffic of the smoke-shrouded bridge for his full 8-hour shift, returned to the scene to work at least 3 more full 8-hour shifts the following days. He was diagnosed with lymphomic leukemia in 1985 and died as a result. Patrolman Anthony Ra, Pittsburgh Bureau of Police, in 1930, succumbed to head and leg injuries sustained the previous day while responding to a fire alarm call. He was responding to the fire alarm at the Fort Pitt Hotel. Vehicle pulled out in front of his motorcycle from a parking lot. He was taken to Mercy Hospital, where he succumbed to his injuries while being operated on to set his leg fracture. Patrolman David W. Lewis, Pittsburgh Bureau of Police in 1900, succumbed to head injuries sustained on June 1st, 1899, while struggling with a suspect he was attempting to arrest for disorderly conduct in a saloon on Smithfield Street near 7th Avenue. And those are our three for today that we honor each and every day. And the reason I do that, and I get a lot of text messages when I do that thanking me for recognizing it. I know earlier, Bob Cordero's show, he does our veterans for our area and honors them. And, our law enforcement, we saw today firsthand, how important they are to our communities, how important they are to the fabric of our nation, how important they are to the safety every day, and that need, that call that you never know what's going to come. And that call today was an ambush for them. Now, we don't know a lot of the details on specifically why that call was made or what the intent was, but it appears that as soon as they arrived, they were fired upon. And you had Colonel Parrish say that their vehicles were riddled with bullets. Officer Trooper Jenkins was shot in the arm. Thankfully, Trooper Paczynski was there to put a tourniquet on. Thankfully, he had the training to have a tourniquet. And this day and age, if you're in law enforcement, if you're a first responder, active or retired, you should have a tourniquet. There is a tourniquet on my person no matter where I go. There's a tourniquet in my car no matter where I go. There's a tourniquet in my kids' car wherever they go, because you never know. It doesn't take an act of law enforcement to need it. You could become severely lacerated or injured anywhere under any circumstance or have to come to an aid of someone who is. I've seen many people who have needed tourniquets that had nothing to do with law enforcement. If you carry a firearm legally anywhere, you should have a tourniquet on your person. So I applaud not only these two officers and the information that they are both going to be okay, but a third officer that is unnamed at this point, who brought his car into the line of fire, his patrol vehicle, to help extricate the two officers who were already wounded and getting them out of there. I hope that trooper's identity is brought forth because they truly need to be recognized. It's no small feat to put yourself in rapid gunfire, the line of that gunfire, when you have two of your fellow troopers wounded and bleeding, to get them out of there. And for the plethora of response from all around, not only locally, statewide from the state police, other municipalities, other counties, other states responded to this. Because when that call goes out of shots fired, officer down, you couldn't imagine the gut punch that is to someone who's been involved with that. To know someone that you call a brother or sister, a friend, is in harm's way and his life may be on the line. And those minutes, and by minutes here in rural Pennsylvania, could be 20, 30 minutes to wait to get there. When you're in harm's way on a critical situation, 30 seconds is too long. Could you imagine 30 minutes? But thankfully, our two heroes here today, and the third, who risked his or her life, no doubt, are going to be going home, hopefully today, if not tomorrow, to their families and get an extra tight hug today. It's 4:41 here at WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? So let's see on this day, August 7th, what we have in history. Today is Purple Heart Day. August 7th marks Purple Heart Day, honoring the brave U.S. service members wounded or killed in combat. The day commemorates the creation of the Badge of Military Merit by George Washington, General George Washington at the time. On this day in 1782, the precursor to today's Purple Heart Medal. Again, 1782, creation of the Badge of Military Merit, which it was originally called. General George Washington established the Badge of Military Merit during the Revolutionary War. This was one of the first military awards for enlisted soldiers awarded for unusual gallantry and extraordinary fidelity. It was later revived in 1932 as the modern Purple Heart. 1964, the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution passed. Congress passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, giving President Lyndon B. Johnson broad authority to use military force in Southeast Asia. The act became the legal basis for the U.S. escalation in the Vietnam War. Resolution was later criticized as a blank check for war without formal declaration. 2007, Barry Bonds breaks the home run record. Barry Bonds of the San Francisco Giants hit his 756th career home run, surpassing Hank Aaron's record. The moment was historic yet controversial due to ongoing allegation of steroid use. Some notable birthdays today. Carl Switzer, 1927, played Alfalfa in Our Gang Comedies. Garrison Keillor, 1942, American author and radio personality, best known for Prairie Home Companion. Charlize Theron, 1975, Academy Award-winning actress, born in South Africa, but a naturalized U.S. citizen. And that's a few of the stuff that I have today. But I also shared something earlier today that falls into today in history. Three more World Trade Center victims were identified 24 years after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And I bring this up because we tirelessly and meticulously collected DNA so that no victims' families could not have closure. It's why we subjected ourselves to over a year of toxic exposure, sifting through rubble, looking for any piece for DNA samples, any evidence that a loved one was lost that day, rather than just them just not returning home. And this just proves that we will never stop in our attempts to bring this to every 9/11 victim. And by we, I mean myself and my fellow detectives who were down there day in and day out from about a week after September 11th until when the full recovery started to over a year later. It's hard to explain the level of detail that we had to go through, the tiniest of bone fragments that were recovered, that were, you know, put in a tube for the medical examiner to do DNA testing on to hopefully get a match. And the new DNA techniques that are out now to where the ones that did not yield a match then are still on a rotation to be tested today based on new DNA standards and technology to get those match. And I posted this article on my social media, on my Facebook, just to show that you know, you are never forgotten, especially our victims from 9/11. The highs and lows of that, and all I need to do is close my eyes and it brings me back there. You know, the hope that we would find more victims, the hope that we found a victim and it turned out to be, you know, nothing more than a part. You know, to where, you know, you'd find hair and think possibly it was someone just buried and alive because it was that close after it. And it turned out to just be a piece of scalp. But the tiniest of pieces, because a lot of it, the entire time down there, and loved ones used to line up outside the perimeter and ask us when we left each day after our 16, 18-hour shifts of sifting through rubble and ask us with pictures of their loved ones, you know, did we find them? Did we see their husband? Did we see their wife? Did we see their daughter? Did we see their mom? And, you know, most of the time it was like, no, we didn't today, but we'll be back tomorrow. And we're going to do again, and we're going to be back the day after that. And you had to look these loved ones in the eyes day in and day out. The entire time there, two of the largest office buildings in the world, did not see a single desk, did not see a single chair, did not see a telephone, did not see a computer screen, did not see a keyboard. Everything was pulverized. And you think to yourself, how in God's name could we find anything in this? But you kept that to yourself because you had to find closure for these loved ones. You had to find something to where they could have confirmation, not just someone not returning home. And to see this still going on today, 24 years later, as tragic as this situation is, still warms my heart that we don't forget. And that what we went through in those that year after 9/11 that subjected us to stuff we're probably going to die from was all worth it. It's 4:53 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 4:57 here. Probably get Jake. And Jake, you got your ears on in there? So Major League Baseball, a little behind the curve here, is calling up its first female umpire, promoting Jen Powell, P-A-W-O-L, for Saturday's Marlin Braves game. Now, this is years behind the NBA, the NFL, and almost every other Major League sports team. What do you think it took so long for the Major League Baseball, America's sport, to get a female umpire into the Major Leagues?
You know, that's a great question, Rob. I don't really know if I have the answer for it, but I mean, definitely a monumental moment, monumental step. I mean, I've seen I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was one of the first female referees that they had. I think it was about 2017 or so. I think one of them actually ended up being a part of the Super Bowl. Yeah, that is a great question. Like you've talked about all the other sports.
It's 28 years after the NBA. 10 years, it says, after the NFL hired its first full-time female official. And 3 years after men's soccer's World Cup employed a female referee. The NHL still has not had a woman of on-ice officials. But now, and this Powell, she's 48 years old, from New Jersey. She's worked spring training games in 2024 this year, and she'll become the fifth umpire to debut this year. The Major League Baseball is getting its first female umpire.
I mean, that's, again, I wish I had the answers for it, and I'm glad that she definitely, had the practice behind it. You know, I mean, obviously, this is a very, very prestigious job, very serious job. But again, that's a broken record. I just, it baffles me how that it took this long.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to see her debut, it's going to be this Saturday, doubleheader between the Miami Marlins and the Atlanta Braves. So she's going to be working a doubleheader. So not a bad first game for her, or first two games for her. So if you want to check it out, there it is. On Saturday, she'll be working the doubleheader between the Miami Marlins and the Atlanta Braves. Congratulations to Jen Powell.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.